Good morning. Today is Tuesday, June the 16th. Joining us this morning is the UC Cooperative head honcho, Jana Valakovic. Good morning, lady.
Good morning, Brian. How are you today?
Good, good. Heavy is the head that wears the crown, right? You know, I used to think Shakespeare was just kind of a political commentator. I didn't realize he was a business analyst also. Yeah. Oh, my. All righty, Winston. Why do we say it?
All right, I've got two here. Which one do you want?
Left.
Okay. Quintessential. Why do we call the ultimate essence the quintessential?
Well, it
I'll give you
like
a hint. It's Greek.
Five reasons or five musts. Quint, short for for you know quintuplets and things like that, and essential is essential. Jana, you got any thoughts?
Well, I love that word, actually. It's regular in my vocabulary, but you're right, there is a five element to it. It implies the perfection, the epitome of the moment, the epitome of the idea. So I don't know how that relates back to five, but it's a great word.
Well, Jana got pretty close there. Because the ancient Greeks believed that there were forms in which matter could exist, fire, air, water, and earth. Right. But the Pythagorean philosophers added a fifth form, ether. It was more subtle than the others and was thus considered to be the purest.
Well, that's why I tripped and fell. The Pythagorean theorem, that was... got me again, you know, 30 years later, but it got me. Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, well, maybe they taught that in chemistry class, something I didn't go to.
Ether.
Yes, the
water,
ether.
Water, air, fire, ether. Well, yeah. And the ether can help us with our with our sanitation issues.
Yeah, yeah, you betcha. Or that pain medication that you forgot to take.
Well, yeah, maybe both of those.
Yeah. Oh, well, yesterday on the show, we heard a little bit about baking and preparation and veggies and all that kind of stuff. And now we're kind of in that season a little bit where in the grocery stores and in the farmers markets and in the backyards, we're starting to see these things called fruit and vegetables coming to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Good time of year.
Yeah. How do you... suggest folks go about selecting the produce and the fruits suitable of canning? Or is there any concern?
No, that's a great question. I always recommend that people get the highest quality food they can in the best condition possible, because then it's, you know, less to clean, and you're putting, you know, the... you're reducing the potential for contamination from other issues that may be, you know, on the fruit or vegetable. So you want to start with your best quality food that you can.
Now, a lot of times we, just being Western, will say bigger is better. Not always necessarily the case.
Sure.
We got some Romas, and they were like hardball size, round,
right,
rather than the cylindrical that you're more accustomed to seeing. Are those varietal changes, or is that an indication that maybe some additional water was given to them, I mean, to take them out of shape?
Well, maybe it's a different variety. It's hard to say. I mean, there's a whole big... Now we're talking about tomatoes, right? So tomatoes you know, there's great diversity in the amount of tomatoes that are available. I think if we're talking about canning and preservation, you know, the flavor will intensify as it's prepared through... your preservation technique. So the better the flavor, as in the fresh form, the better the flavor in the preserved form. I mean, let's talk about strawberries, for example. I mean, it's strawberry season right now. It's a great time to make strawberry jam. And, you know, the higher quality of the strawberry, the more wonderful that jam will be. You know, more complex, more diversity of tastes. You know, the sugars will be more balanced, and the acids will be more balanced.
With a lot of meal preparation, many of us like to kind of customize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I had a absolutely neat discussion with a gal that runs a Mexican restaurant in the area, and she said if there's no garlic in it, it doesn't count as a food product. Yeah. I'm right next to her. If you're going to start to try to customize, are there certain combinations that you want to stay away from? Because tomato, certainly very acidic. If you put something in there, you might get that unintended consequence.
Well, the best recommendation is to follow the recipe and to make sure you're working with a modern recipe. So if we're, we're talking about preservation, not just about cooking. Is that correct?
Well, either option. If we're going to can something, do you use, like the old days, the pectin on the top, so you would have like a wax cap of an inch at the top. I haven't seen one of those things in, decades. But it used to be fairly commonplace for home canners to use pectin on the top as a secondary seal. Okay.
Right.
That thing, is that going out of fashion, or is that new knowledge that says either you don't have to or you shouldn't do some of those historical recipes, might be the way to say it.
Okay, so let's talk about the common mistakes. So there has been a lot of evolution in food preservation and canning, and our Master Food Preserver program recommends that you don't use anything that is not published in the last 10 years.
Oh, really?
Because times and temperatures and elements of the recipes, need to be tested and need to be verified. And when we're talking about food safety and your health and your family's health and maybe your friend's health if you're giving away some of the items that you may have preserved. So stick to the current professionally tested recipes. And resist your mom or your grandma's recipe because much has changed and you really just don't want to make a mistake.
Well, I know some of the older cookbooks have items that are very difficult to find these days, but it's kind of surprising that a Betty Crocker cookbook from 1979 is now unsafe. It's just as intriguing as a concept.
Well, when we're talking about preservation, canning.
Fair enough.
Right? If we're just cooking, I have My Joy of Cooking from the 50s. I love that book, but that's in the current, that's related to the food preparation that I'm going to eat in that day.
Gotcha. Not the preservation part. 819.
Not the preservation.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic from the UC Cooperative Extension at Spruce Point. Jana, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the fact that if it's 10 years old, you don't want to keep that recipe for canning. What are some of those changes that have come into play that if we looked back, let's say if our folks were suddenly our age, and we compared what we do versus what they do, or what they do versus what we do, what would be some of those significant issues that we might have discussion on?
Well, it's really about time and temperature, and there's some tricks. I'm canning is something that I grew up doing, but I'm not one of our amazing master food preservers that we do have in our program that can be more conversant on these topics. But the basic idea is that we tweak recipes to improve their quality and to make sure that we're as thorough as we can be to get enough heat and temperature, heat into the jar, into the right places, to make sure that we have killed botulism. And, you know, none of us want to become infected with that terrible pathogen because it's highly deadly. So you'll see recipes change a little bit in that way, or change in the amount of acid that might be added to it. For example, because we were talking tomatoes earlier, and, you know, I love to grow the heirloom tomatoes. And sometimes I have more of them than I can eat. They're a great eating tomato with great diversity in heirlooms that are available, beautiful colors. But sometimes I'll can those instead of using a more traditional Roma or something like that. But the problem with heirlooms is they tend to be a little bit less acidic. And that's what you like when you taste them. They're very sweet, but they don't have enough acid to... you need that amount of acid when you're doing a water bath canning, which is typical for tomatoes or some of the acid-based items like jams or jellies or pickles. So the recipes now call for addition of lemon juice to help bring that acid up. And maybe a little more time, like if you're doing a whole peeled tomato, because you want to make sure that all that heat penetrates the whole tomato itself. So there are changes along those types of fronts.
I know one of the challenges is just being able to do it all, you know, because it does seem that things kind of all arrive in the same day or day and a half with a lot of the different vegetables. Are there concerns about, okay, if we either leave them on the vine, we'll stick with our various tomato varieties, or if we pick them and let them sit on the counter for a couple of days before we get to them, is there... You know that things are happening because that works with the store-bought ones, too. You buy a tomato, and after a couple of days, it can kind of look a little weird, and then it starts getting soggy, and then it gets furry. Okay. is there a recommended length of time that you can have them off the vine before canning, or is it because the other stuff is... a little bit older anyway, that we've got a prolonged period that we can work with these things and kind of do it night at a time or day at a time and take a couple of days to do the canning we need.
Right. I don't know that I can give you a perfect rule of thumb. Food spoils because there's some kind of microorganism on them, whether that's like a bacteria or yeast or mold. And, you know, the longer they're out, the more potential you have for those microorganisms to grow. I mean, so the basic idea is you want to start with something fresh and something that, you know, you want to eat, that looks good, smells good, has the right texture. And it's not about, you know, taking your old beat up and rotting elements and whether those are tomatoes or peaches or, you know, berries and trying to rescue them and can them because, you know, they're already contaminated at that point. So
canning frozen items. Yeah, let's say we pick blackberries. Not the Himalayas, the real ones, the blackberries, and now we've got, let's say, 5 quarts worth. Well, okay, not really sure if we want to can them, if we want to turn them into pies, or really what direction we want to go. So we throw them in the freezer Ziploc, drop them in the freezer, and now we're 3 months down the road.
Right.
Okay, so now we thaw them back out. Are they better suited for certain products now, or can you use them... pretty much as you would have if you didn't put them in the freezer?
Right. Well, berries, whether they're blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, how I like to freeze them is to put them on a cookie sheet and spread them out and then freeze them so that they're separated. And then I take them and collect them and put them in a Ziploc bag. And if I double bag them, that also helps reduce the amount of potential freezer burn that they can get. And you can then use them as you would a fresh product. So it's, you know, you can put it into something you might be baking. You could preserve it, make it into jam later. You could put them in a pie. Lots of options.
You got a big freezer, don't you?
Well, yeah, I have a narrow cookie sheet. but, you know, I love blueberries just like in my cereal, and I love how the milk will freeze up to the edge of the blueberry, and it makes a little plushy, right? So there's lots of options. That's about a year in the refrigerator, and then, you know, it gets funky and a little too much freezer burn, and the flavors start to degrade. And so I think it's really about you know, not taking too big of a plate when you eat. Same kind of approach here. If you're growing food and you suddenly have this bumper crop, try and assemble a group of folks together so you can process it all together. Or if you're going to the farmer's market and you're buying items that you're going to preserve in some way, then, you know, buy what you can manage and buy what you can eat within a year.
That's kind of the rule of thumb, right? Within a year?
Yeah. Within a year, yeah.
KINS.
I have a hard time following that myself. I'm yeah.
to. That's why they invented
two boxes of those apricots. I love apricot jam. And
well, that's why they invented labels too. It's 8:30.
Right.
Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. If you see a down power line, stay away from it and keep others away. Call 911. Let our first responders come out and handle it. Police and fire will respond as well as PG&E. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at smokeybear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, Ad Council, and your state forester.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic from the California Cooperative Extension. Yeah, cooperative being the key word here, right? We're cooperating.
Right. Well, because we're in partnership with Humboldt and Belmont counties for our program. So.
All right. And so, that's you are with me part. And I am with you. So everybody's kumbaya on this thing. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Jana, is with some of the different challenges that are out there, doing preserves, doing, I guess, baking, all that kind of stuff, with the kids at home, I would think it's a great opportunity to learn and maybe pass along some of the recipes and some of the traditions of the family. However, if mom or dad aren't home, you know, you're kind of flirting with danger there a little bit also.
Right. Yeah, I mean, these are interesting times, but many of the listeners may know that I'm a parent, and so trying to come up with activities and structure for kids that, you know, used to be in summer camps or, you know, had jobs or had other opportunities during the summer to keep them going, and now those are maybe slow to come back or won't come back, we don't really know. We've been, in our shop, trying to make sure that people know that the curriculum we use for our 4-H program is accessible and available to parents, whether they're a part of 4-H or not. And, you know, I've got some friends with younger kids, and I'm totally amazed that they come up with a daily activity. And they've done this now for months, you know, to give a little structure to their children's lives and an opportunity to make sure they learn something. So I don't know if there's parents out there that are facing sort of the same challenges, but they're welcome to call our office at 445-7351, and we'd be happy to walk people through what's available, or they're welcome to look at our Cooperative Extension website. They've got lots of information posted and available, so, you know, you could find an activity for, you know, several days. Take, you know, an adventure in learning, and it can be about animals, photography, robotics, all kinds of different programming we have available, and just to give a little structure. And like for those parents that are maybe doing some kind of co-op to watch the children, you know, I'd be at a total loss if I suddenly had five children to entertain for a day, and conversely, you know, had the next day off and had other parents watching my kids. So we just want to let people know that we're here, and you don't have to be a professional teacher to figure out how to use this stuff. It's really pretty intuitive and helpful. So, you know, that can be about food. It can be about animals. It can be about anything, really.
Are there age categories, I suppose, you know, something that would be appropriate for, like, 8 and 9-year-olds versus those that are 13 and 14?
That's right. So the guides are written so you can see what age group is appropriate for or how to scale it at a different age level. So, you know, you can kind of go, oh, well, if my kids are 8 or 9, this is what would be appropriate and this would be a fun activity for them. And as, you know, as people get older, I mean, even thinking about something to do with my daughter, who is in her later teen years, and maybe she could be, you know, a teacher of some of these for other kids as we start to, you know, have more families interact a little bit more. That could be some options where you've got, you know, teams of teachers, for example. How do you do that?
With some of the different opportunities that are out there, you had mentioned in the last segment that some of the approaches have changed. The healthier stuff is one of those that we hear more and more about. I guess Atkins and you know, some of those came out 15, 20 years ago. Are those books still safe to go buy if you bought, let's say, like an Atkins, either cookbook or preservation, you know, Preserving Atkins or, you know, whatever it might have been titled? Do those need to be updated as well?
That's a great question. That's a little beyond what I know. What I'm just going to, you know, share is that if you're in the preservation mode, then, you know, be looking at the modern recipes. So if you're going to be doing some kind of canning, then you really want to make sure you follow those best recipes. When it comes to, you know, making, you know, just a meal that you're going to eat that day, I don't have really any additional feedback, just to say that, you know, just be smart and wise about what you read.
Low sugar is a big deal, or sugar-free also. And now we've got
the
stevia and Truvia and sweet and low, and, you know, all the various sugar options that are there. If the recipe is calling for sugar, is there a rule of thumb that you can just make a quick substitution? Is it one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or are there some of these that are not suitable for preservation?
Right. When you're making jams and jellies, the content of sugar is fixed, and it's important to follow the recipe. There is, however, a new type of congealing product, which is called Pomona's Universal Pectin. And so the pectin is what actually helps gel up or firm up the jam or jelly that you're making, and it's designed specifically for a whole variety of sugars and sugar forms and in a lower sugar product. And I use it all the time. I don't love an overly sweet jam or jelly. I like a little bit more like a fruit spread. So it's a little more country style, shall we call it, maybe? A little chunkier from time to time. But then I can use more of it and, you know, my toast, a little more of my toast or my peanut butter and jelly sandwich or, you know, whatever I'm using my jam for. So Pomona's pectin is pretty flexible on the sugar type and is really quite easy to use.
So you end up with more of like a marmalade than a jelly.
I mean, you can make it as a traditional jelly. The way I tend to make it is a little bit more like a marmalade or a spread, but that's just my style. But it's super flexible for jams, jellies, marmalades, even Jell-O, right?
Well, you're not throwing away as much of the fruit, so it's also a extender.
Yeah.
Keep your chunks. Extend the number. Yeah. KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic. Jana, with the challenges that the state is having with the budget, the county I know is going through its final spasms, I guess, of putting together a tentative, wink, wink, let's use this as a starting spot budget. Last time we were together, or last month when we were together, you'd indicated that there was going to be some significant funding changes for the cooperative program out of the UC. You have any clarification on that at all?
No, we're still in the great free fall at this point. So we're funded two ways, funded through the University of California, which comes from the state of California, and then we're funded through the county of both Humboldt and Del Norte. And Humboldt has been going through their budget review process, and in fact, yesterday they had budget hearings, and I really do want to thank the supervisors. They remain very supportive to our programs, and even offered to give us a little supplemental budget to support our 4-H program last night, so that's a huge shout-out to them. I really appreciate that. But we all know that, you know, it's not clear what the sources of income are for state and county governments, and the expectation, or what we're prepared for, is adjustments at first quarter. So budgets get adopted by July 1. First quarter would be, you know, September, October in there, 3 months later, when we have a better sense of what it really looks like. So as a county department, we've been told to prepare for 2.5%, 7.5%, and 15% across the board cuts. So those are significant numbers. We're a department with extremely low margins, and so, you know, we'll just hope for the best, and, you know, it would affect everybody equally in that way. But at the state level, again, the state's just is in flux, and so the way the state budget works is that the governor puts out a proposal in January, and then there's, you know, back and forth negotiations, and then there's something called the May revise. And in the state of California front, the May revise was a radical change from what Governor Newsom had proposed, given all the changes with COVID and the expenses that have gone with that and the declining revenues and the uncertainty of, you know, property tax, sales tax, income tax, all those pieces. So it was a pretty radical change from what had been out in January. The legislature rejected that, and said they didn't like the level of cuts to youth, to senior programs, to a whole range of issues. And they basically last week or Monday approved their own budget so that they would meet their budget timetables, but it doesn't match the governor's one. And so the idea is that it's basically a postponement of the issues with a commitment to renegotiate over the next couple of months and hopefully get greater clarity on what type of revenue is coming in. The governor largely based his budget on expectations of more federal stimulus money coming down to the state to backfill the expenses that have been incurred associated with COVID, and that remains a point of negotiation at the federal level that, you know, I'm not a betting individual, so it's hard to say whether that will pan out or not. So it's just this great period of uncertainty, and we're in the middle of all of that on both the county and the state side. So, you know, we want to remain optimistic and be here in the long term. So, you know, hopefully cooler heads will prevail and things will turn around and we'll be in a better position.
Kind of tough to have a balanced budget when you're expecting a gift from somebody else, and then you factor that into the budget.
You know that tons of people are hurting across the state, and you can't, you have no idea what level of bankruptcy, deferments, delays, all those things. And so it's a great unknown.
Nothing easy, but, you know, it gives you something to do, too, so what the heck. Thanks for popping in. Enjoy the rest of your month, Yana.
Okay. Well, thanks, Brian.
All righty.
We'll talk about something more next week. Next time.
There you go. We'll be in touch.
Okay.
See everybody tomorrow.